of his life here. I'm so sorry for being late. For whatever reason, I tried to get in from Echolink, and I have plenty of data coverage, but I couldn't get to the Echolink server. There's a problem with the Echolink server tonight. So I was a little late getting on to the air. So before we start, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR W2TTT. Alrighty, that's a good answer. Alright. Well, good evening, everyone. This is the belated start to the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net meets weekly on a frequency of 146.955, the 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club Alpine repeater. This net is a conversation held weekly about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, natural phenomena that support all the wonderful things that we like to do, and or just the fun and the fellowship we have about it. So even though we call it the TechNet, you can pretty much talk about things you're working on, things you'd like to work on, things you're fond of working on in the past. They could be projects, they could be just activities, any number of things. So we organize ourselves in a semi-organized way once we get started here. And that net, and then we start off by calling up people by call sign group, so we'll be W's, K's, N's, and A's, and things like that. So the way this will work is you can check in with a question, comment, which could also be something you want to brag about, or a for sale or swap item, or none of the above, or all of the above, any of those things. So you might ask, if I have no question, no comment, and nothing for sale or swap, why would I want to check in? Well, the reason for that is we need to know who's out there so that we can kind of address subjects that are in a manner consistent with, you know, your interests. And we might even call upon you. Don't use that as a reason not to check in. But, you know, we might call upon you to be a resource for a question. There are oftentimes people don't realize that they themselves are great resources on a topic that they really hadn't thought about. But some of us will think about it and, because we know you. And we may just want to take a flyer and see what you think. So, with that in mind, let's start with the A's. Any station whose call sign begins with the letter A, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, comment, a for sale or swap item, or in some combination of that or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Okie dokie, let's try, I'll do this, I'll live dangerously, the November stations. Wow, no November stations either. Okie dokie, let's try the whiskey stations.
This is Whiskey to Juliet Charlie. Jim, none of the above. All right.
Evening, James. I think you have something to talk about. I'd like to hear more about your... I'm going to ask you to talk about your endeavors to get the box working on the handy talkies for in digital mode or even in voice mode. We'll talk about that if you don't mind, okay?
Limited experience at it, but over.
You have more experience than 90% of the people on the net. Okay, and we'll also get into the Echolink. This net is available via Echolink, by the way, assuming it's up, via K2FoxtrotJuliet-L, K2FoxtrotJuliet-L, if you so desire. I am not on it right now. All right, any other whiskeys?
W-E-2-R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Very good, Charles. Good evening. Good to hear you. Any other whiskeys? Alrighty. How about the ever wonderfully popular Kilos, including the ones who checked in before?
K2BAR. This is K2ZO. I have one question and a few comments. Back to that.
Excellent. Good evening, James. Any other Kilos?
AD2, CMS. Kilos, Delta 2, Charlie, Mike, Sierra, Roy.
Okay, Roy, gotcha, KD2CMS. Thank you for doing that phonetically. And will you be making questions, comments, for sale or swap or other points?
Maybe we could touch a little bit on small antennas for like limited spaces if you got some time.
Absolutely, I got that noted. Thank you very much. Any other kilos?
KC2, UNH. Paul, one question.
Very good, Paul. Good evening. I got your question noted. Welcome aboard. Any other kilos?
A2AMI, Tony. No questions, no comments tonight.
Very good, Tony. Just a reminder, though, you might want to make a comment about Sunday's activity, okay?
Let Jim do that. He's more familiar.
Roger. Okay, we can do that. Any other kilos?
KD2CRB, Sue, with a comment.
Good evening, Stu, and I have your comment noted. Kind of curious how your antenna's working, by the way. If you could add that in, if that wasn't part of your agenda, if you would add that in, I'm kind of curious how that funky dual-band J-pole worked for you. I think it was a dual-band, yeah, the Arrow J-pole. All right, very good. Any other kilos?
82DDK, portable down in Patterson. Gary.
Very good evening, Gary. Will you be issuing questions, comments for sale or swap?
All of the above. There's a number of questions I have, and offer some help to anybody that may need it from me.
Okay, we'll get to you. Very good, Gary. Thank you very much. Anybody else with Kilo? Okay, we've done Alphas, we've done Novembers, we've done Whiskeys, we've done Kilos. Okay, let's go back through. Anybody else who has not checked in at this time other than echoing? Kilo Delta 2 Delta question, then you dropped out and you came back and then you dropped out again. Didn't get much of that. Can you try to improve your signal a little bit and try again? Kilo Delta 2 Delta question mark, I think it was. Stacy just was dropping out. Try that again, please.
Kilo Delta 2 Delta Kilo November. Right now I'm just listening because I just hit this frequency, so I'm just to hear what's going on.
Great. And what's your name and location, sir?
My name is Kurt, and I'm Wanted Kurt Morristown.
Okay, I think you said Wanacute. No, then you said Morris County, so somewhere in Morris County. All right, very good, Kurt. Welcome aboard. Just a little of the French, but, you know, a little effort, I think it'll be a lot more solid. Doesn't take much. All right, very good. Welcome aboard, and welcome to Ham Radio. All right, any other stations wishing to check in?
KP2, TRW, good evening. No questions, no comments.
KP2, TRW, forgive me your name, sir.
Hi.
Is it Pat, you said? Papa Alpha Tango?
Kai, Kilo Alpha India.
Hi, Kai, I'm sorry. Duh, I know who you are. I apologize. I think, are you from Dumont, or are you from Haworth or someplace up that way? I'm trying to remember now, but I seem to remember you might be from Dumont along with Paul.
Yes, going up from Dumont. I apologize, I haven't checked in for some time.
Your audio is just a little light. Just a little light. I mean, so close talk that microphone, because I know you're soft-spoken, unlike some people I know. All righty, welcome aboard. Anybody else? Okay, how about an echoic, anybody?
Good evening, Kilo 60 Julia Tango Tango San Diego. No questions and no comments at this time.
Good evening, Nestor. Always good to hear you. Awesome. Welcome from the East Coast. Actually, I'm going to be on the West Coast in a couple of weeks, but I'll be up in San Ramon, up near San Francisco, and places north of there. So Otherwise, I'd make a point of crossing paths with you. Alrighty, anybody else on Echo Link?
This is Whiskey 2, Lima Charlie, November. I'm not on Echo Link, but I'm a late check-in. Rick, no questions, no comments. Send it back over to you.
Good evening, Richard. Good hearing you, and interesting email back and forth, and thank you for that interesting material reference for the acrylic. That's awesome stuff. I can't wait to try it. Alrighty, anybody else? There was a station there. Anybody else again, please? The same station.
Kilo, Charlie 2, Yankee, Japan, Victor. The name is Victor. Colonia, New Jersey. No traffic anything.
Okay, very good, Victor. Welcome aboard. Any other stations? Okay, very good. With that in mind, let's go to the... I'm going to go to K2ZO first. K2ZO, you have... Why don't you make your comment first, then ask your question. K2BAR.
Okay. K2BAR. This is K2ZO. Okay, well, a while ago, I was talking about the Astron power supplies, and I was repairing a couple. And I also experienced a couple of grounding anomalies, let's say, and did a little investigation, and I find that most of the older Astron supplies physically have a ground bus going from the negative supply in the DC supply right to ground, and the same place where, of course, the green wire from the AC line cord is grounded. Now, in most cases, this doesn't cause a problem, but in some cases, it does. I sent you an email about repairing Astrons and a whole thing from the repeater builders group, and it discussed problems that people have had. Let me just drop a second. Did you get that email last week, Gordon?
I did. It was rather interesting, actually. I can't believe that they've kind of tripped over this problem in the first place, and the solutions are intriguing.
Well, there's enough things that you can do to make the Astron supplies work better in RF fields and stuff like that. And that discussion there is a number of information. Anyway, my interest at the time was, why was this thing grounded? And of course, they have changed their ways, and all of the new ones are not grounded on the negative lead. So I went and checked, and I have 220 amperes and 235 amperes. The 35 amp adjustable one, which is adjustable for current and voltage, is a newer one, and that is not grounded. However, my 35 and my 20s actually had a wire going from the negative lead right smack over to ground. So you could have all kinds of problems because you only want to make one ground on that power, and of course it's usually at the radio. So the general consensus is, and of course from that information that I sent you, is that most people who repair these things, so the first thing that they do when they open one up is cut that ground wire out of there. Back to that.
Yeah, so let me ask this question. If, perchance, your power supply was grounded and you were just dropping a radio into place, might you consider, might you consider basically not bothering to ground the radio at all? Which I know is not advised, but if you already have your power supply on a grounded bus and it's built in the original format where the ground was provided, the DC was grounded in the power supply, you probably would avoid those problems, assuming that your power cable wasn't, if you will, looking for trouble and being resonant and things like that. Yes, no, maybe?
Well, is that not a problem, but if you look at most modern radios, you've got your connections to them. Your Molex plug in the back. Well, if you check that thing, you'll find, for the most part, that the minus lead, the negative lead coming into that, is grounded in the radio. And therein lies the problem. For most simple setups, you don't really have a problem. But if you've got some rather sophisticated preamps and things like that, or you have a repeater, I know two or three people have had problems even just with their regular radio station. One of the fellows that does get on here also had a problem and found that that's what it was. But there's a good discussion in there about why you don't want to do it, especially for repeaters, and it tends to introduce hum. So the problem is that now you've got two grounds, and as I said, in most cases, it's not really a problem, but it could be. So the answer is remove the ground and now just rely on the one ground that's on the radio. I have that ground. I have the frame ground, of course, going to a ground bus, but the negative lead of the power bus going to the radio, power lead going to the radio, is grounded. And take an ohm meter and check any one of your radios. I think you'll find that's the case.
Yeah, of course it is. The chassis is. But what I'm saying is that if, you know, I mean, those same radios often have a ground lug on the back to actually earth ground. So if your power supply is already at earth ground, you don't want to then also, I mean, especially that Astron power supply, you wouldn't want to also then ground the radio because then you'll get a ground loop situation. So, you know, the real trick is, you know, in an ideal world is the radio chassis to a short earth ground, and I guess what you're saying is float the DC supply, the DC side of the supply from the power supply through to the radio and let the radio be the ground. That's your point. So that way you don't create an a voltage differential and that RF ground is DC ground and you're all good.
That's exactly it, and that's what was discussed in that thing I sent you. So that's one of the things. And so if you run into a situation in your station and you have that problem, you could always go ahead and unground that lead in the power supply. So as I said, I have taken that out of the three Astrons that I own. Now, interesting, all of the newer ones don't have it. So somewhere along the line, they got educated and no longer do that. So there you go. And the other question that I had, another comment I wanted to have make, is that the barometing, let me let it drop for a second. Okay, the barometing this Sunday at the Senior Center in Washington Township, that's the 180 Hudson Avenue, same place as where the police department and the municipal building is. We will have Mike Lysenko, N2YBB, who is the newly elected Hudson Division Director. He's got a lot of interesting ideas on things he wants to do in the Hudson Division. Some of them are things like an upcoming convention and or a dinner and or both, and of course a few other things. So he's an interesting guy, and has got some very interesting ideas as to things the league should be doing or not be doing and stuff like that. So he is going to discuss some of that with us. So you're all invited. So anybody who's listening, come to the Barrow meeting and meet Mike, and you'll be educated on what's going on in the Hudson Division. Okay, back to that.
That's very good. That's very good. Anybody else have any comments about this?
have a question about the power supply, if I may, please. This is KD2 Sienna.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, is Pascom one of the better quality power supplies to buy for your equipment?
Yeah, they can be. I mean, they're pretty good. I mean, they're not lab grade, but they're adequate. And I like the ones that are. I mean, personally, I like the ones that are iron, because and are not switchers. And I have lots of switching power supplies, but the iron power supplies are quieter. You know, and so I'm a bit of a receiver noise junkie. So that's hugely important to me. But you can take that to the bank as far as, you know, as being overall better. But, you know, they're also heavier. So, if you know, for a portable power supply, you might want to think about something different. Jim, what's your impression?
Well, they're heavy. KTBAR-K2ZO. Yeah, the Astrons are good, basic. I guess I would describe them as beaten potato power supplies. There's nothing really technically new about them. They've been doing the same thing for 40 years, well, maybe 30. But they work, and they're good, and they're easy to fix if they blow up. They're solid state, the switching type supplies, they're newer switching supplies, I have two, are very good. So either way, I think you'd be okay with any one of the Astrons. Some of the earlier linear supplies, the big, Gordon is talking about, needed some work, and by work I'm talking about bypassing and things like that, which were very easy to do. And they would get a little befuddled around strong RF fields. And the reason was that the chip in there, the regulator chip, was not bypassed in their earlier ones. Their later ones were all okay. And I sent a file to a reference on a website to Gordon about that. So if anybody's interested, he's got it. And discusses a number of things you can do to an older one to pick it up. But you can't go wrong with them, but they're heavy, okay? And as you say, if you're going to move around, I prefer when I go to the field and go to Field A, my IOTA supply, IOTA, do a search on them. Their 55-amp supply weighs 7 pounds, and it's bulletproof. Very, very good supply. Back to net, K2ZO.
Yeah, they are wonderful. They're a little pricey, but at least I think they are. You might, you know, disabuse me of that notion, Jim. But, you know, in the $100 class, there's everything from the MFJs to, you know, to the Jetstreams to the, some of the other ones. I can't remember what it is. Oh Lord, what's the one that looks like the little Jetstream extruded aluminum chassis power supply, but was made by somebody else? I'm trying to remember now. Maybe Diamond? No, not Diamond. Another Japanese manufacturer, but it came in an extruded aluminum case. You know the one I'm talking about?
No, I'm not too sure.
Anyway, the earlier versions of those, if you had RF close by, just like you were saying, you could destroy them, and I did destroy one, and they have no user serviceable parts, because what they do is they slide the power supply into the extruded aluminum case, and they do it with a medium drying epoxy, so once it's in the rails, it's not going anywhere. I mean, you can hammer it out, you'll get pieces, but you'll never get the board out. And part of the reason for that, and you can't find a schematic for this thing anywhere on the planet. And the reason for it is because it's got high voltage and they just didn't want the liability. So, but they're about $100. The little MFJs, with or without metering, some of them have Anderson power poles on the front. That's always a nice touch. There's a couple other things that are pretty outrageously good. There's a new one out I saw that looks sort of like the MFJ with the dual what do you call it, Anderson power poles on the front panel. I forget who it is. The PowerWorks. It's the PowerWorks power supply. Let me warn everybody about that one. The front connector with the Anderson power poles is only capable of supporting 6 or 7 amps. If you're going to use the full 25 amp capability of the power supply, you must use the regular binding posts that are on the back. So it is not a, if you will, a lightweight plug-and-play equivalent of the MFJ, little square, you know, brick-sized power supply. I was a little disappointed about that, but I actually got to see and touch one down at HRO in Delaware on a recent trip down to Annapolis, and I was really disappointed when I saw that. Because the other PowerWorks stuff is pretty cool. But anyway, anybody else have any comments or questions on this subject?
Casey, to you, Neil.
All first?
Yeah, just a quick one on power supplies and noise. I picked up an Elenco at the last Power Ham Fest, and the one thing it came with was an absolute screaming fan in it. So I basically just swapped it out with the new silent computer fan with a thermistor in it. So it basically runs quiet. If it heats up, it runs faster, but it's absolutely silent.
So you went in and hacked it open and put a 12-volt computer fan in there?
Yeah, basically that's it. They're the same size. They just screw straight in to direct replace.
Now, I'm wondering if that might not be a bad idea to do for the MFJs, because their fans are a little on the noisy side, too. That's something to really give some consideration to. I'll tell you a funny story. I, in the center of my ham shack which is in the center of my house, is my operating bench with my single point ground, and it bus bars back to the ground for the tower and everything else. Underneath it, on the wall, there just happens to be, it's across the room from my operating position, it is a standard household outlet on the wall, and that's where my Fios interfaces, my routers, things like that. So I threw another 12-volt power supply in there and booted up one of my little, Atom computers. I plugged in a monitor. It worked fine. Monitor runs on 12 volts as well, a little Acer monitor. I ran a long 20-foot cable across the room and relocated the monitor to be closer to my operating position. And the display would not come up with actually a display, but the light said the monitor was active, and I could not see a damn thing. All of a sudden, I said to myself, I'm wondering, just wondering, if there's a differential ground. Sure enough, there was. I do have a ground loop in my house, because the household ground is different than my shack ground, which is different than my tower ground. So my shack and my tower ground are bonded together, and I do actually bond the ground for the household through my ham shack. But there is another ground at the entry point, which is, looped through a different way. And since it's a third floor ham shack, it makes it interesting, because the ground for that side is apparently different than what's in my operating position. So all I did was run a 12-volt cable in parallel with the VGA cable and the HDMI cable, and magically the everything came up. It's all on the same 12-volt source. About that little problem or things like that.
Break,
go.
AC2KI, monitoring.
Good evening. Will you be adding questions, comments, or for sale or swap?
Nick from Nutley, New Jersey. Yeah, I'm curious about, I'm getting ready to set up a base station, and I'm curious about these Astron supplies, how hardy they are.
hard. If you, you can use them also for upper body strength building, too.
I have one that had never been turned off in 22 years.
Yeah, that's pretty much been my experience. I think I have, I've had several over the years, and I think I managed to kill one, but I did bad things to it. But, yeah, they're fine. I mean, they really are a magnificent iron power supply. I think, Jim, you hit the nail right on the head where, with what you said about them.
Yeah, I'm curious because, by the way, you're the second USO I've come in contact with. I just went out and got my amateur license. I went out and got all three. I took all three elements all at once, so I'm just trying to get a feel for this. So if I do something that's wrong, you guys have to kind of walk me through this. Can I ask what the QTH is on the stations that I'm copying?
Sure. This is W2TTT. Right now I'm mobile. Actually, I'm fixed, but I'm in my mobile in Hackensack. But I live in Bergenfield, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Any amateurs welcome to participate. We welcome you aboard. It's a discussion that's weekly on this repeater at 9 p.m. And so we hope you'll join us again. I got that you were Nutley and your call sign was AC2KI. What is your name, sir?
Just forgive me. I thought I gave that. My name is Nick, and I am from Nutley, AC2KI.
Well, congratulations. A triple play of your ham license. That's pretty cool. And my name is Gordon, and we have quite a cast of characters in here, probably about as part of almost 2,000 or 20 stations in here. So, Nick, if you'd like, we can take another comment from you in a few minutes. Let me just see if there's anybody else who wants to talk about these power supplies or power supplies or in general.
W2JC with a comment.
Yeah, Jim.
I managed to get a switching supply for my ICOM 7000, which is a Samlex, S-A-M-L-E-X. It's a 30-amp supply, and it's quiet as a church mouse, and got the same footprint as the 7000, so they stack beautifully.
Yeah, they do. And the power supply I was thinking of, I think, was an Alinco. I subsequently got another one. The Alincos have the one I'm thinking about anyway, has a switch on it for power, another switch for either having the meter read current or voltage. And I think we've all seen those. And that's the one I managed to fry with RF, the earlier version. But the second one I have not managed to do that to. But just to make it simpler and easier, I have been carrying more of the MFJ supplies, and I have to go portable. All righty. Anybody else on power supplies? That was interesting. Okay. Jim, you have anything more?
Yeah, I had a question.
Go right ahead, sir.
K2BAR, K2ZO. I wonder if anybody's had any experience with a ICOM antenna tuner. In looking at the schematic of this thing, I'm trying to figure out how this thing works. It looks like I'm trying to test it and see if it's good. It was a donation to Fairlawn, and they handed it to me and said, see if it works. It appears that the way this thing works is that, of course, you have 12 volts on it. This is a thing in a fiberglass box, a remote antenna tuner. And you have a what apparently is a start line and a key line. And when this thing goes into the tune mode, the key line keys the transceiver, so you keep putting out RF. That's pretty simple to figure that out. But it looks like the start line is kind of a combination of an inhibit and a start. Looks like it wants about 8 volts at a little bit of a high impedance so that you could then ground it without a problem. And when you ground it for a short period of time, the unit goes into tune. At least that's the way I think it works. The transceiver I have doesn't allow you to use that function. some of the older ICOMs, you know, they have a plug in the back and they have a tune button or something, but I can't figure out how to do it on my 7600, so I'm just trying to do it manually. Anybody got one of these things and actually use it? You know, as I say, it's designed for an ICOM, but I'm sure you can, you know, jury-rig it to make it work. I'm just curious as to what I need to do. I wonder if I've figured it out right. But has anybody done it?
Is this like an AH-2, 3, or 4?
Now, the AH-2 actually had a box to allow you to tune it that did just what I'm figuring out, because I was looking at the AH-2 schematic that now made me figure out how the AT-130 worked. The AT-130 doesn't have that. It's designed to get all of its signals from the back of a radio.
Oh, okay. So this is an AT-130, not an AH-2, 3, or 4. Okay. I honestly don't know. My gut feeling is you're probably going to have to emulate that external box from the AH-2, which for the 3 and 4 they did away with and just introduced a little more intelligence into the tuner itself. I think that's kind of where you are, but the AT-130 is, in fact, the AT-130, everything from the TS-130, the 530, I think the 520 will work. I know the 830 will work. The 120 will not work. I'm just running through my head where I've seen this problem before. But I honestly don't know what the signalization is at the pin level.
Well, I figured out that, you know, you got 12 volts in ground. It's got a key line that goes back to the transceiver, so that's not a problem figuring that out. What I'm trying to figure out is what I put on this DC line. Now, the DC line says it's got to be somewhere around 8 volts, but it also says that you ground this line. Well, I don't want to take a low impedance power supply and put it in there and ground it, because it's going to blow up. So obviously, it's got to have some, like, resistance in it or something. And my question is, I was trying to figure out what I need to do to get that to make it start to tune. I can jury-rig some RF into it and make the rest work, but the information I have on it is very sparse. And if they had put some kind of a description as to what does what, it would make it an awful lot easier. Other than in a service manual with a bunch of voltages, if they, you know, just said what you need to do to jury-rig it, well, then it would be much better. So, anyway, that's where I am. So if anybody's got one, let me know. Back to that, K20.
Jim, I'm thinking a couple of ideas here to help you. One is, look for articles on the net where someone's used an AT-130 with a radio for which it wasn't originally intended. Like, or see if anyone had, just like Google AT-130 controller, something like that. You might find something like that. I'm kind of drawing in straws here, but that comes to mind. So I think there are people who have built various projects to support the 130, and I think, you know, other tuners are like, maybe even the AH-2, if you lose the box, I think a homebrew AH-2 controller or something like that might be another search key.
That's a good idea. I'm going to try that right now.
Those are the two things that come to mind, because I seem to remember that AT-130 controller, especially for radios that are not Kenwood, but that'll kind of break it down. And I'll bet you there's an article out there somewhere on it from somebody. All righty. Well, any more, Mr. Jim?
That's it.
Okay, Mr. Roy, KD2CMS, your question, sir. And thank you, Jim, for your comments and questions. K2BAR.
KD2CMS. site for the offer, so to be forwarded.
Yeah, I looked at a buyer radio. I heard about the ASU 897. It's something that's good for all bands. This way I can buy one radio because of my limited spaces for my station. And I just want to get some ideas on some antennas that I could use either indoor, outdoor, 20 to 40. Well, actually, from 440 to 20 meters. I don't know if I could go with a 40 meter because of the size of my apartment, but I'd like to do a little HF.
And you're in an apartment with a really limited antenna situation. I mean, the 897 is a fine radio. It would, you know, if there's a little more in the budget, you might want to look at, and depending on your space issues, you know, there are some other alternatives out there. A clean but used ICOM 746 Pro will give you HF 6 meters and 2 meters, sideband and CW, all that FM, all that good stuff. That might be something else to consider. An IC7000 is just bloody delightful. I'm partial to them. I like their receivers better. Now, what's nice about the 897 is that, you know, it's an integrated package, but including you can even get inboard batteries, but I would recommend that if you do get the inboard batteries, that you don't buy them, don't buy the Yaesu ones. There's W4RT, Whiskey 4 Romeo Tango, has a bunch of really good accessories for that radio in particular. I really do like that. And I did have an 897, and while it was a bit heavy, I had bought it used and had Yaesu batteries. So it's better, like, it was a little underwhelming, but it was nice to be able to throw the thing on the desk or throw it on a picnic table and immediately start operating the second I get the antenna and microphone connected, or antenna and key connected. And so that was kind of cool. So that aspect was really, really attractive. But you couldn't operate terribly long. But if you get the W4RT batteries, you'll probably last a bit longer. That might be one thing. Or forego those batteries and put them internally, and instead get the A123 batteries from Buddy Pole. Get the largest pack they have, and for about $300, which is probably cheaper than W4RT batteries. You'll have a little bit better battery life, even though if it's external. Any test thoughts on this for Roy?
So I'm going to be operating probably up by a month, so I won't be doing too much operating a part situation at this point in time anyway. But what I failed to tell you is I do have a balcony on my apartment, a small balcony, so something that could be a vertical antenna that could be brought in and out would be helpful. I would like to get an idea of size.
Yeah, well, you can make a dipole out of two hamsticks. Hamsticks are about 7 feet long, typically. The full-size hamstick's about 7 feet long. So, 14 feet across. And you can make one go out and one go down, you know, so they don't have to be totally symmetrical. You can even arrange them like a V. But you basically make an inverted V or some sort of dipole-ish thing, and you just change the width if you so desire for using the buddy pole width, right, buddy pole. The hamsticks. That's probably the easiest thing to think about, over.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit possible to me with the balcony. And I was just wondering, I guess you need to use an antenna tuner for the if you're going to operate different bands. Obviously, that would be a necessity.
Okay, yeah, and since you've got your heart set on an 897, let me also give you one other tip about the 897. Do not buy the FC30 tuner. Let me say that slowly. Do not buy the Yaesu FC30 tuner. Instead, go buy yourself the LDG AT897, Alpha Tango 897, because it will resolve a 10-to-1 SWR, whereas the FC30 from Yaesu will resolve maybe a 3-to-1 if you're lucky.
Right. At the club meeting Sunday, and, you can write that down for me when I'm there. Right now, I'm kind of I have a tight budget, but right now I'm in the planning stages of everything, so I'm not in a rush right now.
Okay, let me give you some advice. I was in the planning stages several points in my life about getting an HF radio, and sometimes those points lasted 3 to 4 years. And in one case, something else emerged during that cycle that gave me better price performance and such like that. But I actually advise doing almost a what would you want to do versus what's the capability of the radio to meet that need. So especially living in an apartment, the ability to take it mobile, the ability to take it portable is something that, you know, has a certain level of attraction, because, you know, you're going to want to occasionally try it with, quote, a relay antenna. That desire is almost insatiable. So, you know, let me give you some warning on that. But yeah, I can write all that down for you at the meeting. Anybody else have any thoughts on this subject? It's a good subject. You know, how to buy a radio, and, you know, what's the needs versus use analysis and the feature functions. Okay. Roy, anything else?
You've been pretty helpful, Gordon, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss my topic. So back to the next, KD2, CMS.
Very good. Bring a sheet of white paper, and I'll just write it all out for you. I can do that in a heartbeat. I've done the needs analysis specifically for the 897 as to what it wants. I mean, my only concern about the 897 and the 857, which are about the same receiver, not quite the same radio, is that they're not an FT100. An FT100 or an FT100D is a vastly superior receiver with better DSP and better visibility on the dial. The problem is they discontinued it because the transistors went out of production, so that forced Yaesu to discontinue the radio. Now, there are some aftermarket replacements that give you about 90 watts instead of 100, but, you know, that wasn't acceptable for a production unit, but it was acceptable for, God forbid, repair maintenance type activity. But anyway, we'll talk later. All right, very good. KCTUNH, thank you, Roy. Paul, your question, K2BAR.
KC2UNH. Quick question about Raspberry Pi. My plan with it is generally to sort of package it up with stripped-down radio, something like the UE5R, or something like Tony Bark's Soft Rock. Package it in a box, you know, so it can either run alone or stick a keyboard and display with it. My question's on interference. How much shielding and how would I shield the Raspberry Pi so it doesn't actually interfere with the radio? Because I know the clock chip will generate out FM. So, you know, like how much shielding do I have to do, and what would be a good thing to actually shield it with? KC2NH.
Well, you know, that's a really good question. So there are a couple of things that come to mind. I mean, the Raspberry Pi doesn't have a lot of, shall we say, Part 15 requirements because it's not a completed unit, right? So it's just a board. So there's some issues there. The other thing to consider Oh, yes, this person's going to let me into the gas station. I can't believe we actually have gas lines, like, everywhere tonight. But anyway, the couple of things to do. One, take the unit and look for a metal case. There are some metal cases out there. A lot of lucite and plastic cases of various forms, but there are metal cases, number one. Number two, any lead that comes out of that sucker, you might have to throw some ferrite around it, just to keep it calm, as it were. So that's another thing. But I think the best answer is prototype it and try it without doing anything. Just cobble the stuff together and see what you have. If you have your Pi already, just for everybody's reference, a Raspberry Pi is a small microcontroller. Runs Linux, or I think it'll run an Android OS too. But bottom line is that I would try it, just firing it up and take an AM transistor radio and start moving it around and just see how much junk there is out there. That's something to consider. By the way, final in the Devils Tampa Bay game 4-2. Marty Brodeur has more wins this season than the Tampa Bay franchise does. Anyway, grin. So anyway, anybody else have any thoughts for Paul? And, you know, I just realized I'm speaking in tongues, too. The reason for taking the AM broadcast radio and start hovering around the Raspberry Pi and the cables and things like that is to see if you can hear any noise. What you do is you tune between the stations, so you, and then you just bring the AM radio close to whatever you're trying to sniff out and see, you know, how horrendous the noise is. If you have to stay right on top of it, it may not be a problem. In fact, it may not even be a problem for the Tony Parks board, but the first thing I would do is I'd literally breadboard it, Paul. Over.
Okay, that sounds good. Just one small comment, which is that they released a new version of the Pi, which is the stripped-down Model A. No Ethernet and only one USB, so the package is now actually smaller. KC2, yeah, here's back to net.
Let me just tell you, for your purposes, don't do that, okay?
Okay.
You don't want to sit there, you know, for one of a $10 bill, you don't want to sit there and strip it down. You're not building an industrial controller out of this thing that where you need 100,000 of them. You want to save $1 million. I mean, you know, that is literally, a problem.
KD60A disconnected. Connected. KD2DKN. Connected. KD2DKN.
Okay, so, that would be my only complaint or suggestion. Also, having that extra USB is, you know, helpful when you're just trying to get it up and working. You don't have to run a hub all the time, you know, for instance. By the way, one of the things that's really handy, if you can get it to work, is to use a wireless keyboard and an attached mouse that's sharing the same transceiver. So wireless mouse, wireless keyboard, or a wireless keyboard with a built-in trackball or touchpad. You know, they're cheap enough. They're less than, you know, $30. Yeah, at Microsoft, you can find a half a dozen or a dozen different wireless configurations for under $30. You can also spend $100, and I, for the life of me, don't understand why anyone would want to spend much more than $15 to $20, occasionally $30. But that's something to think about as well. I've been buying a lot of those kinds of things lately. In fact, tomorrow and Saturday, I will be working with my Pi and a thermal probe, actually, on a virtual serial port. Alrighty, anything else? Mr. Paul?
No, I'm done. KC2, yeah, here's back to that.
Yeah, and by the way, if you decide that you do need shielding other than with ferrite on the cables, you know, we can talk about that. I will probably be looking around for a metal box for a Pi anyway, but that's because I want to do some things that are specifically related to RF sniffing. I still want to take the DVB-T receiver chip, plug it into a Pi, and then take the I and the Q feeds across the Ethernet connection, or even a Wi-Fi connection, or the plug-in Wi-Fi, and then do the demodulation somewhere else across the net. I think that would be, like, wicked cool. We'll talk about that as time goes on, too, okay? Okay, very good. All right, Stu, it's your turn. How you doing with your arrow, and what else do you want to talk about? Maybe that is what you want to talk about, maybe not. KD2CRB, KGBAR.
KD2CRB to KD2BAR. Yeah, I'm very pleased with the arrow. Seems to be working okay. I am hooked up to it, and was very pleased with the investment. And my only other comment is I got hold of a general manual, so I'm studying. Hopefully I can upgrade the general. That's about it. Back to Pat.
Outstanding. Is that what you wanted to talk about, huh?
Yeah. I'm cracking the books, and hopefully in a couple of weeks I'll be ready and see if I can take the general element and go from there. And I will be attending the Barra meeting Sunday night. Looking forward to seeing everyone back in that.
Yeah, me too. I got a busy Sunday. Mass at noon. Scout Sunday at the cathedral at 2. Dinner out with the family, and then the meeting at 7. So it's going to be a busy kind of day. It'll be fun. All right, very good. Have a good one. And thank you. And by the way, Paul, for your questions, too. And I think our next person is Gary, KD2DDK, KGBAR. Questions, comments, and confusions. Go for it, Gary.
KGBAR, KD2DDK. Yeah, guys, some quick comments and stuff. I'm doing it, as you can tell by the call letters with the pet. But 40 years ago, back in the late 60s, I was general class. But it all expired. Spent all that time with the phone company. From RF engineering to computer stuff. Right now, retired, limited budget, in person, transplanted from upstate New York, just getting back into everything. Found out about the net, and my first one. That's about it. Computer stuff, right now I'm standing in the hallway outside the apartment because I got too much computer stuff running. Between what's going on in there, there's a little bit of interference with Alpine. Right now, we're running one of those Chinese HTs, and I just got accepted to Echo Link, so I may try that later.
Well, good for you. Very, very good, and slowly putting the hand stuff back to together and getting your license all squared away. Good for you. That's excellent. And Gary and I, by the way, speak a lot on 442 WHUSQ repeat up on William Patterson. He's kind of a fixture there since he got back on the air, and it's nice to see him on. Anybody have any questions, comments, suggestions, words of encouragement for Gary, or for that matter Stu, in their pursuits of getting things going?
AG2KI, I'd like to throw a few words in if that's okay.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, it's I got all three done in one night, but I should clarify there's a reason for that. I got my RF degree in college back in 83, but all my friends at work kept bugging me about getting my ham license, and since the local BCE, still getting all my terminology down, forgive me guys, the local VE Nutley Ham Club only meets for examinations every 2 months. I just thought it best to knock them all out at once. let me recycle here. Hold on. I don't know what the timeout is on this repeater, so I didn't want to overstep my bounds. You know, you can. There's a lot of good. The QRZ.com is the one I use primarily, and I really like it because they'll tell you immediately if you've got the answer right or wrong. And, you know, based on my past experience with RF, it was pretty easy to knock out all three at once. Right now, the biggest challenge is trying to find somebody I can get some some base station equipment from that won't break the bank.
Ah, yes, I understand that. So let me ask a question. Let's see, Nick it is. What do you call it? Where'd you get your degree in? I mean, you said electrical engineering, I assume, but where did you get it, and where have you worked, and what kinds of areas have you applied these wonderful academic skills?
Oh, real good. I got my degrees in Northern California. Kind of a funny story. My dad gave me a choice after getting my high school diploma. He said, you can screw around for 3 years or do whatever you want, but in 3 years you're out on your own or you're paying rent on the room. So I thought, well, it might be good to get some academic credentials behind me. So I actually got 3 degrees in 2 years, broadcast technology, cable TV RF technology, and electronics technology. You had to have your FCC general class back then before you could graduate. So I got all three up in Northern California.
That's funny. That's real funny. Okay, and what areas have you worked in?
Primarily as a broadcast engineer, TV stations, post houses. Right now, I'm working at NBC Universal at 30 Rock in the city.
Okay, well, very good. That makes sense. Okay. So you keep Brian Williams on the air. Well, good. Someone better. For me, he's crashing disappointment from a political and faith viewpoint. But I'll just move right along. All right. Let's see. Welcome to Ham Radio. I'm glad you got your licenses all squared away all at once. That's really, really good. Very few people can do that, but it's not surprising that you did, given your background. All right, anything else you'd like to add, or anyone else would like to chime into something for Nick?
Can I throw one more thought in? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on anybody. I just want to throw AC2KI. I want to throw one more thought in. I'm looking at getting a multi-band transceiver for my ham shack, for my base station. And I saw one YouTube video, and I'm wondering how practical it is to use, don't laugh at me too much here, everybody, use the rain gutters for HF. Come back.
If you bond all the sections together, it works really well. If you're just looking to have them work because they got jammed together, not good. But you know, if you actually take the time to bond each section together, it's perfectly reasonable. You do have to make sure they're not inadvertently grounded, but other than that, it's a fine thing to do. Nothing wrong with that. Nice, big, fat broadband conductor. Why not?
Yeah, Roger that. Yeah, that's my biggest concern. I was going to bring an ohmmeter out to the house because I noticed that one side of the gutter goes down into a, looks like a metal storm drain, but it has cement all the way around it, so I'm going to get an ohmmeter and check between the storm drain and the rain gutter to make sure that the rain gutter's not grounded. If it is, well, then I kind of defeat the whole purpose. Come back.
Okay, so let me give you an idea. Cut it, and then seal the cut with JB Weld, which is not conductive, and therefore you'll have all the benefits of the conductor without the grounding effects.
Yeah, good idea. The only problem with that is this is an apartment building, so I don't know how happy they'd be about me going in there taking a hacksaw to their to their storm drain. So in any case, I definitely want to do a lot of public service with ARES, and I can't work with Mars right now because they definitely want to see that you have some HF equipment already installed, so that's out of the question. But the AERS and Also, whatever local auxiliary group is in my area to monitor the wave for FCC violations.
Yeah, I don't know how much there is in that. You can talk to our section manager if you can reach him, Rich, down in Monmouth County. Good luck with that, by the way. I'm a life member of the league, and I'm proud of it, but section-wise, this section is lacking some oomph. I'll just leave it at that, but my own personal opinion. In any case, what else do I want to say? As far as your water pipe or your apartment issue, maybe you can find a way just to decouple two pieces and put some sleeving in that's not conductive or something. I mean, it'll still have a capacitive ground at that point, but maybe you can find some less destructive way of going about it. On the other hand, you might find that it's fine, and maybe even that it's a high impedance point in the circuit, in the antenna circuit, so you don't have to worry about it too much. It'd be kind of like having a 600 ohm resistor or maybe even a half meg resistor at the other end of an antenna. It's technically a DC ground, but it's not going to sit there and spoil you as long as you don't try to cook it. So try. Can you get access to a megger by any chance?
I'm sorry, repeat, we'll get access to a what? I'm sorry, ATQKS?
A megger. It's a device for measuring very high resistances.
Yeah, I'm sure I could talk to somebody down at the shop and see if, I'm sure somebody has something like that, but I'm trying to do this as maturely as possible since I just got my extra class. I'm trying to, it's funny because I kind of did everything backwards. I went to the highest possible ham license, and now I'm trying to, have Elmers like you guys hold my hand and help me, one, talk on the radio without doing anything inappropriate, and two, from a technical standpoint, just trying to, I want to get something that's all bands, because even if I can't use HF, I can still use VHF and UHF to, work the local repeaters and if I want to do some simplex stuff around here. So it's gonna be a little bit of a crawl before I start running a marathon, technically speaking. Come back.